Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part 2 Faculty of Social Science. Now, I am going to record the next poet of the poetry, Percy Basu Shelley, or P.B. Shelley. First of all, introduction. Shelley's love is divine. Shelley's music is celestial. Shelley's philosophy is spiritual, and Shelley's soul is blessed by Lord. No doubt, Shelley has been sent by Lord to heal the hurt of the wounded humanity and human beings of the world through his spontaneous, mystical, musical, magical and lyrical hymn of the intellectual beauty. Percy Basu Shelley, the spiritual poetic revolutionist, the most romantic of all the romantic poets, reveals a new cult of spontaneous mystical lyricism in English poetic world. How poor by fate, how poor by fate. How unhappy by life, how frustrated by wife, the poet P.B. Shelley faces as a man of expectation and recites, if winter comes, can spring be far behind? But poor Shelley, he has been expelled from college, rejected by wife and dejected by life. Weeps and echoes, alas, I have nor hope nor health, nor peace within nor come around, nor that content surpassing wealth the sage in meditation found. The life of Shelley was tossing on the waves of the ocean of domestic life. Yet, he looks for beauty, the spirit of beauty, and loves with hopes for true life. Real joy, soul empire, and glorious victory. Now, the life history of Shelley. Percy Basu Shelley was born on 4th August 1792 at Fill Place near Horsham in Sussex. His father, Sir Timothy Shelley, was a narrow-minded representative of an old country family. His mother, Elizabeth Pilford, was a very beautiful lady and fairly well intelligent. Being the son of a rich landlord, the child Shelley had all that could be desired by way of comforts, for he was the first child of his parents. He had five sisters and one brother. All were junior to him in years. As a boy, he was all romantic in every nerve and invented wonderful stories for the delight of his admiring sisters. His imagination was deeply stirred by ghost stories which he read as a child. Shelley received his early education at home, in company with his sisters. In 1802, he was sent to school at Sion House. Then again, he went to the public school at Eton in 1804. In 1810, Shelley left Eton and went to the University College, Oxford. Here, in Oxford, he showed great eagerness in his studies, especially of poetry, philosophy, and classical literature. But his conventional and free religious views brought him in conflict with the authorities. He despised Christian dogmas and wrote a pamphlet with the title The Necessity of Atheism, for which he was expelled from the university. Shelley thought then the world was against him and he ought to be henceforth against the world. Then again he married Harriet Westbrook out of sheer chivalry. She was a pretty girl of sweet 16 and was his sister's classmate. In due course of time, Shelley began to grow cold towards his wife Harriet. After 3 years of married life, Shelley and Harriet were separated forever. 2 years later, Harriet committed suicide by drowning herself. Soon his passion turned into genuine love with Godwin's daughter, Mary, a girl of 16, and married her in 1816 after Harriet's suicide. On July 8, 1822, he went to pay a visit to Byron along with his friend Mr. William. When he was returning, the weather had become stormy and the sea was rough. And he and his friend too, both were drowned. Thus, the great poetic revolutionist had died. Now, his works. P.B. Shelley was one of the greatest romantic poets of the 19th century. He produced a number of longer and shorter poems, and all of them are so fine and fragrant that they claim the reader's particular attention and study. There are some of his chief works as follows. First, Queen Mab, 1813. Second, Attester, 1816. Third, The Revolt of Islam, 1818. Fourth, Rosalind and Helen, 1890. Fifth, The Cenci, 1819. Sixth, Prometheus Unbound, 1820. Seventh, Episcidian, 1822. Eighth, Adonais, 1822. Now, Shelley as a poet. The philosophy and ideology, theme and thought of Shelley's poetry. Percy Bysshe Shelley has rightly been regarded as one of the best romantic poets in English literature. Before we make a serious study of Shelley, it is very necessary to draw our attention on his theory of poetry. Shelley's theory of poetry. According to Shelley, a man cannot say, "I will compose poetry." It is only when the poetic mood is one of the poet that he composes verse. He believes when the poet is inspired, he is at a higher level than the level of day-to-day life. Then he composes poetry. To him, the poetry is the record of the best and happiest moments of the happiest and best mind. He further says, "Poetry is the mother of wisdom and delight." Thus, poetry is the language of imagination. Poetry is the expression of imagination, and the poet lives in the world of his own creation. Now, the source of Shelley's philosophy of poetry. Godwin, Plato, and Rousseau were the major influences on Shelley's thought and poetry. Godwin, the revolutionary philosopher and novelist, exercised an enormous influence on Shelley. He believed that man acted according to reason and that rational creatures could live in harmony without laws and institutions. Shelley came early under the influence of Godwin when he wrote Queen Mab, in which he attacked dogmatic religion, government, industrial tyranny, and war. He based his thoughts on Godwin's political justice. Shelley was the greatest Platonist. Shelley learned from Plato that one supreme power governs the whole universe. Where there is no love to him, the world would have been a mass of matter with no life and beauty. From Plato, Shelley has learned that earthly beauty is the manifestation of heavenly beauty. In many of his poems, he presents this attitude to life. From Plato, Shelley learned that life is unreal. The body is nothing but merely the prison house where the soul inhabits. With death, soul is no longer enmeshed. Rousseau believed that man is born free, but everywhere he is in chains. His theory of return to nature and his revolutionary ideas influenced the literature of Germany, France and England, and it is Shelley who has been much impressed by the philosophy of Rousseau. Fourth, Shelley's nature philosophy. Shelley's philosophy of nature is pantheistic. He believes in a spirit or soul at work in nature and causing all phenomena. He makes innumerable nature myths. He is one of the greatest myth maker in modern times, and his myths have the freshness and sureness of touch of the ancient Greek myths. Shelley's idealism. Shelley was a great idealist and poet of desire. He was ever yearning for the ideal, the perfect and the beautiful. Perfect love, perfect beauty, and perfect liberty were his ideals. As his ideals could never be achieved, he was forever frustrated. A melancholy note runs through all his personal poetry. Shelley's passion of reform. Shelley was fired with a passion for reforming the world, and he was quite hopeful of the dawn of a golden age when love would take the place of force and evil would be overcome by good. Hatred of all tyranny and oppression, denunciation of priest and king as symbol of tyranny, a dislike for tradition and convention are the recurring notes of his poetry. He is really a poet of future, heralding the dawn of a millennium at no distant days. Shelley's love of nature. Like all the other romantics, Shelley too loved nature. He found in her a companion with whom he talked as a human being. He was more interested in the wider and vaster nature than the homelier and familiar aspects. He loved the play of lightning, the motion of the clouds, and the regions of storms. He liked to paint nature into flux. He is more interested in the doing of his nature than in her appearance. Shelley as a poet of love. Shelley is first and foremost the poet of love. In his essay on love, Shelley observes, "Love is bond and sanction which connects not only man with man, but with everything that exists. Love is the governing force and cementing power that unites all the particles and atoms of matter and brings human beings in close communion with one another." Shelley's conception of love is spiritual. Love governs the life of nature as well as the life of human beings. His love is related to nature, beauty, lady and life. Shelley's love is idealistic throughout. Thus, love plays a vital role in the poetry of Shelley. Melancholy note in Shelley's poetry. Shelley is a philosopher of more or less melancholy mood. When he paints, his life shows that he is a person who has fallen on evil days, condemned to a lot of utmost suffering. There are many poems where he presents an expression of anguish. He is so dejected in his life that he feels very sad and says, "Alas, I have nor hope nor health, nor peace within nor come around." So he often expresses his desire for death as he writes, "I could lie down like a tired child and weep away this life of care which I have borne and must bear till death like sleep might steal on me." Thus, the sense of melancholy brings a lot of philosophy and ideology in Shelley's poetry. Now, Shelley's classicism. Shelley was a scholar deeply read in ancient Greek literature. This is seen in his choice of Greek themes and in his frequent allusion to Greek mythology and literature. He had dived deep into Plato and the ideas of Plato color his works. His conception of love is essentially Platonic. His love lyrics are entirely free from the element of sex. He was a Greek in his passion for beauty and perfection. His style too is essentially classic in its simplicity and austerity. Now, Shelley's lyricism. Shelley's genius was essentially lyrical, though he had written long narrative poems, epics, and dramas. The lyric impulse penetrates all of them. As a lyricist, Shelley remains unexcelled in the history of English literature. His lyrics are marked with spontaneity and effortlessness. The lyrics of Shelley cover a wide range and variety and can be classified under three different heads. First, personal lyrics. Second, lyrics of nature. And third, lyrics of hope and liberty. As J.S. Simon says about him, Shelley was the loftiest and the most spontaneous singer of our age. He was born to sing rather than narrate a tale. Shelley's optimism. In Shelley's poetry, pessimism, the result of frustrated aspirations, mingles with an equally intense optimism. Shelley was fired with passion for reforming the world, and he was quite hopeful of the dawn of a golden age when love would take the place of force and evil would be overcome by God. Symbolism in Shelley's poetry. The word symbolism in its sense means the imagery used by a poet to express his ideas. Shelley's imagery is symbolic to an unusual degree. He uses symbols after symbols in his poetry. For example, in Queen Mab, the revolt of Islam, etc., the idea of the struggle between good and evil is symbolized by the struggle between the serpent and the eagle at the beginning in the revolt of Islam. Shelley uses the word poison to express spiritual evil and corruption. The symbol of bat and stream have been used by him many times and at different places. He also uses cloud as a symbol in many of his poems. Now, style and diction. So far as the diction of poetry is concerned, he himself says that it should be elevated and dignified and elegant. Order, harmony and rhyme should be its characteristic merits. It should be in tune with the poet's thought. The style is grand, philosophic, descriptive, deductive, scientific, and dynamic and effective that touch our mind, heart, and soul. Thus, musical ecstasy of his lyrical poetry will always attract a large number of admirers of his poetry. Age cannot wither his charm, nor custom stale his reputation in year to come. Thank you. Now, the first poem of P.B. Shelley, Ode to the West Wind. First of all, summary of the poem. In the present poem, Ode to the West Wind, the poet Percy Bysshe Shelley expresses his very vivid and organic idea about the eternal effect of the west wind. The poem begins with an indication to the wild west wind that is the very life of the autumn season. The dried and withered leaves fall down to the unseen presence of the west wind. They are driven before it like a ghost feeling from a magician. The leaves of various hues have been flown away with very great forces by the west wind. This west wind, however, is a preserver as well as is a destroyer. It acts as a chariot to the winged seeds. It takes them along to their wintry bed, where they lie cold and low throughout the bitter winter. When spring comes, gentle jar will awaken these seeds to life. Flowers will spring up everywhere and fill the atmosphere with their beautiful colors and perfume. The effect of the west wind is also seen on the clouds too. They are like the leaves on the tangled boughs of heaven and ocean. These harbingers of rain and lightning are shaken by the wind, driven into confused masses and fall to the earth as rain. The strange scattering clouds are seen from the dim verge of the horizon to a great height, like the uncared curls on the head of some fierce Maenada fringed worshipper of Bacchus, the god of wine. The year is dying. The west wind sings the funeral song over the death of the year. The darkness of the night, which is spreading over the earth, will serve as the doom of that tomb. This is evaluated over by the clouds from which will burst rain, fire and hail. So he prays to the west wind at last. The Mediterranean is disturbed in its summer dreams and roused from its long slumber by the west wind. The poet describes the effect of the west wind on the Atlantic Ocean. He says that when the west wind blows on the Atlantic, its water is disturbed. Waves again begin to rise all around. Before the west wind blew, the surface of the Atlantic was level. But now it would seem as if the Atlantic has cut a path on its surface so that the west wind may pass over it. He further says the plants at the bottom of the ocean are damp, but they have no sap in them. When the west wind blows, these plants know that and they begin to fear, because the west wind disturbs them as it disturbs the leaves in autumn. So the trees and plants stand in great terror of the west wind. All these things are right scientifically. Shelley prays further to the west wind that if he is a leaf or a cloud, he may get the power of the wind. In such a situation, there is no need to pray to him. If he has the eagerness and dream of his childhood, he remembers that there is no need of the west wind, but he is neither leaf nor cloud, nor he recollects the dream of his childhood, and he has to face many difficulties in this real world. So he requests the west wind to sweep him away as if he were a leaf, a cloud or a wave. He is crushed and buried. All his hopes are gone. He is fully helpless. Lastly, the poet wants to lead his life as a forest so that he may be affected by the west wind. As the leaves of the forest are falling, similarly, his thoughts are also falling off. So he prays to the west wind to give him some such a power that he may also fly as leaves and can gain new life. He requests the west wind to spread his optimistic idea in the world. If winters comes, and can spring be far behind? This logical development of the imaginative idea is admirable. There is no song in the whole of English literature more passionate, more penetrative, more full of the force by which the idea and its form are united into one creation. Hindi Saransh. Prastut Kavita, The Ode to the West Wind, Paschimi Hava Par Geet, के अंतर्गत कवि पीवी शैली अपने सजीव विचारों को प्रस्तुत करते हुए पश्चिमी हवा के प्रभाव का वर्णन करता है। कविता का प्रारंभ पश्चिमी हवा को आह्वान करते हुए कवि कहता है कि वह पतझड़ में भी जीवन प्रदान करता है। सूखे और बिखरे पत्तों को देखा जा सकता है जो अदृश्य पश्चिमी हवा के प्रभाव से गिरे हुए हैं। पत्ते उसी प्रकार से पश्चिमी हवा के प्रभाव से बिखर जाते हैं जैसे जादूगर के प्रभाव से भूत। विभिन्न रंगों से युक्त पत्ते बिखरे हुए हैं पश्चिमी हवा की शक्ति के कारण, या पश्चिमी हवा रक्षक एवं विनाशक दोनों ही है। परदाय बीजों के लिए यह हवा रथ का काम करती है, वह उनको अपने साथ उनके शीतकालीन बिस्तर पर ले जाती है जहाँ वे जाड़े में अंत तक पड़े रहते हैं। तत्पश्चात बसंत की हवा के प्रभाव से जीवित हो उठते हैं, हर जगह फूल खिल जाते हैं और प्रत्येक स्थान को अपने रंगों एवं सुगंध से भर देते हैं। पश्चिमी हवा का प्रभाव बादलों पर भी पड़ता है, वे भी पत्तों के समान आकाश एवं सागरों के मध्य लटके होते हैं। हवा और विद्युत के संदेश वाहक पश्चिमी हवा से भयभीत हैं और वे भय से आवृत होकर वर्षा के रूप में पृथ्वी पर गिर पड़ते हैं। क्षितिज से लेकर चरम बिंदु तक बादलों का अजीब फैलाव शराब के देवता से उत्तेजित पुजारिन के सिर पर उठे बालों जैसा मालूम होता है। वर्ष समाप्ति पर है, पछुआ हवा अंत्येष्टि गीत गाती हुई नजर आती है। इस वर्ष के अंत की रात मकबरे के गुंबद की भांति मालूम पड़ती है। यह गुंबद बादलों पर टिका हुआ है जिससे वर्षा और ओले पड़ेंगे। अतः वह पश्चिमी हवा से प्रार्थना करता है। गर्मी के दिनों में भूमध्य सागर में पश्चिमी हवा के द्वारा हलचल प्रारंभ होता है। यह अटलांटिक महासागर को भी प्रभावित करता है। चारों ओर धाराएं उठती हैं। पश्चिमी हवा चलने के पूर्व सागर शांत रहता है। जब यह हवा अंद महासागर के ऊपर से गुजरती है तब इसके अंदर के पौधे भी कांप उठते हैं जैसे कि पतझड़ में होता है। इस प्रकार वृक्ष एवं पौधे भी भयभीत अवस्था में रहते हैं। ये सभी कृत्य वैज्ञानिक रूप से भी सत्य हैं। शैली आगे भी पश्चिमी हवा से प्रार्थना करता है। वह कल्पना करता है कि काश वह भी पौधा अथवा बादल होता तो पश्चिमी हवा से शक्ति प्राप्त करता। ऐसी अवस्था में उसे प्रार्थना करने की कोई आवश्यकता नहीं होती। यदि उसमें उसके बचपन की उत्सुकता एवं स्वप्न होता तो उसे सब कुछ प्राप्त हो जाता। ऐसी अवस्था में उसे पश्चिमी हवा की आवश्यकता न होती, किंतु न तो वह पौधा है, ना ही बादल है, ना ही उसे बचपन का स्वप्न याद है, और उसे अनेक कष्टों का सामना करना पड़ता है। अतः वह पश्चिमी हवा से प्रार्थना करता है कि उसे वह बहा ले जाए जैसे मानो वह कोई पत्ता है या पौधा या धारा। वह बर्बाद हो जाएगा यो एवं दफना दिया जाएगा। उसकी समस्त आशाएं समाप्त हो चुकी हैं, वह पूर्णतया असहाय है। अंततः कवि वन के समान जीवन व्यतीत करना चाहता है ताकि पश्चिमी हवा उसे प्रभावित कर सके। जैसे पौधे एवं पत्ते झड़ रहे हैं उसी तरह उसके विचार भी गिर रहे हैं। अतः वह पश्चिमी हवा से प्रार्थना करता है कि वह उसे ऐसी शक्ति प्रदान करे ताकि वह भी उड़ सके तथा जीवन में नई धारा प्राप्त कर सके। वह पश्चिमी हवा से प्रार्थना करता है कि वह उसके विचारों को संपूर्ण विश्व में प्रसारित करे, क्योंकि यदि आज जाड़ा है तो कल वसंत भी आ सकता है। कल्पना शक्ति की इतनी तार्किक विचारधारा प्रशंसनीय है। संपूर्ण अंग्रेजी साहित्य में ऐसा गीत नहीं है जो इससे अधिक तीक्ष्ण, प्रभावशाली एवं बलशाली हो, जिससे विचार और उसकी आकृति मिलकर एक हो जाए। नाउ द क्रिटिकल अप्रिसिएशन ऑफ द ओड टू द वेस्ट विंड। The Ode to the West Wind is undoubtedly one of the finest lyrics in English literature. This ode was written in the earlier part of October 1819. Mrs. Shelley's own note is, "The poem was conceived and chiefly written in a wood that skirts the Arno near Florence, and on a day when that impetuous wind, whose temperature at once mild and animating was collecting the vapors which pour down the autumnal rains." This ode was published with Prometheus Unbound and other poems in 1820. In the poem The Ode to the West Wind, the poet P.B. Shelley presents a very vivid and organic picture of the power of the west wind. It has been called a destroyer and a preserver, for it destroys the leaves and puts the seeds in cold places where they sprout in the spring season. The fury of the wind is so impetuous that the foliage of the Mediterranean Sea turn pale with fear. It strikes terror in the heart of the oozy woods. The poet beautifully describes the fury of the west wind. The sea blooms and the oozy woods which wear the sapless foliage of the ocean know the voice and suddenly grow gray with fear and tremble and despoil themselves. Its image. The ode is equally remarkable for its vivid imagery. The similes and metaphors are exquisitely used. The second stanza of this ode is full of remarkable imaginary. The poet beautifully imagines that the wreath and drift of the brewing storms are like the locks of a maenad. The female flowers of Bacchus, the god of wine and revelry. Its lyricism. The ode abounds in lyricism, and there is no song in the whole of English literature more passionate, more penetrative, and more full of the force by which the idea and the song are united into one creation. In the opinion of Clouton Brooks, it is the first of those lyrics which, by almost universal consent, have made him the greatest English lyrical poet. Brooks calls it the lyric of lyrics. Its art. This ode is a work of art. It is usually faultless. Its nervous delicacy and overflowing imagination lift it to an undisputed pinnacle of artistic excellence. It is, in fact, the matchless ode. Its subjectivity. The ode is subjective in character. It brings before us the feeling and aspiration of the poet. We are acquainted with his tameless, proud, and unrestrained spirit. We get glimpse of his zeal as a reformer. We feel the sadness and the weary weight of his disappointed and dejected life. Oh, lift me as a wave, a leaf, a cloud. I fall upon the thorns of life. I bleed. A heavy weight of hours has chained and bowed one too like thee, tameless and swift and proud. It's prophecy. This ode is prophetic in a in character and embodies Sally's optimism. The poet implores the wind to broadcast his ideas and his prophetic words over the human society until there breaks out from them the universal conflagration of a regenerated and progressive humanity. He is quite hopeful about the sure success of his mission because if winter comes, can spring be far behind? Sally's love of nature. The poem illustrates Sally's love of nature. Here, it is to be particularly noted that in this ode, there is a perfect union between the poet's spirit and the forces of nature. Sally seems to steer the element which he invokes and with which his own soul sweeps along in wild but not lawless union. Its metre and rhyming form. The metre of the ode is Tresa Rima, and Sally has managed it with perfect mastery. It is not a series of 5 sonnets, though each stanza has 14 lines. Because the English sonnet is generally divided into quatrains followed by 2 stanzas of 3 lines, each with a concluding couplet. The metrical scheme of the ode answers to the natural articulation of feeling and passion and is carried through without break. Its language and style. The language of the ode is superb. Every word of the poem undoubtedly has some deeper meaning and reveals a new philosophical attitude to the readers. Some biblical and Greek mythological words have also been used that affect the mind and heart. For example, wild spirit, which art moving everywhere, destroyer and preserver, here, oh here. Here, every words haunt the ears as well as the mind. The style of the ode is very personal, yet it has universality in it. It gives a descriptive, didactic, emotional and passionate philosophy to all. Lastly, we can say without any hesitation, The Ode to the West Wind is a great revolutionary poem in English literature which has ever been written. It is as immortal as the Wordsworth's Ode to the Immortality. Rhymes are ABA, BCB, CDC, DCD, EE. Now, explanations of stanza with reference to the context. Now, first stanza of the poem. O wild west wind, thou breath of autumn being, thou from whose unseen presence the leaves dead are driven like ghosts from an enchanter fleeing, yellow and black and pale and hectic red, pestilence striken multitudes, O thou who chariotest to their dark wintry bed the winged seeds where they lie cold and low, each like a corpse within it gives until thine azure sister of the spring shall blow her clarion over the dreaming earth and fill driving sweet birds like flocks to feed in air with living hues and odors plain and hill, wild spirit which art moving everywhere, destroyer and preserver, here, oh here. Reference: these lines have been taken from the poem Ode to the West Wind, composed by one of the greatest revolutionary poets, Percy Bysshe Shelley. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the effect of the west wind. According to him, the west wind has some such supernatural power that brings a very revolutionary changes in the natural sites. Explanation: the poet P.B. Shelley addresses the west wind and thinks that the breath which has been taken by the autumn takes the form of the west wind. The wind is blowing, but it is invisible. One can see the effects of the powerful wind. Here he gives an example and says, just as the ghosts fly away at the presence of the magician, similarly, the dead leaves are flying at the presence of the west wind. Here, the unseen wind is compared to a magician and the dead leaves to the ghost. These leaves are yellow, pale, black, and hectic red in color. These dead leaves driven by the wind are compared to the people suffering from some plague and driving away from their town by pestilence. The west wind scatters the winged seeds and drives them to their dark cold beds under the earth. They are like the dead bodies. The seeds lie in their graves, unable to move or rise till the spring season comes. The poet calls the spring the sister of autumn and of the west winds. But while autumn is dull and gloomy, the spring is marked by light, brightness, and blue color. So the spring comes with its lights, breezes, and blue skies. She blows her trumpet in order to awaken the sleeping earth. With the coming of the spring, nature awakes into a new life. So the poet imagines that the spring blows a trumpet in order to arouse the earth, just as a trumpet is blown to call the soldiers to duty. On hearing the calls of the trumpet, the seeds come out of their graves. Here, the poet compares the spring to a shepherd. Just as a shepherd takes his flocks of sheep to the fields in order to graze them, similarly, the spring drives the seeds out of the beds in which they are thrown about into the open air. With the coming of the spring, birds and flowers begin to bloom and feed in the air, just as the sheep roam about the feed in the field. In a word, the spring will fill the valleys with birds and flowers which have beautiful colors and sweet smells. The poet again addresses the west wind. He calls it an untamed spirit because it is making itself felt all over the land. He addresses it as destroyer and preserver. It is a destroyer because it drives the rotten leaves before it. The wind breaks them up and scatters them into small pieces which are lost. It is preserver because by scattering and driving the seeds to their underground beds, the wind preserves them, which later sprout into plants. To this west wind, which a destroyer and preserver, the poet appeals that his words should be spread and heard all over the world. Now the next stanza of the poem: though on whose stream mid the steep sky's commotion, loose clouds like earth decaying leaves are shed, shook from the tangled boughs of heaven and ocean, angels of rain and lightning, there are spread on the blue surface of thine airy surge. like the bright hair uplifted from the head of some fierce maenad, even from the dim verge of the horizon to the zenith's height, the locks of the approaching storm, though dirge of the dying ear, to which his this closing night will be the doom of a vast spellcurse, vaulted with all the congregated might of vapors from whose solid atmosphere black rain and fire and hails will burst. Oh, here reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet P.B. Shelley expresses his idea about the west wind which destroys the rotten leaves and gives the spring power to develop the seeds from the earth into birds. According to him, this west wind always gives a new life to all the natural sights. Here, he describes the charms of the west wind over the sea and the sky. Explanation: here, the poet P.B. Shelley describes how the west wind blows from the sky to the earth. He presents a picture and compares the clouds which float by the force of the wind to the leaves which fall on the earth. We can understand these lines by imagining that there is a vast tree whose roots are in the ocean and whose branches are high up in the sky. From the branches of his tree fall clouds in the same way as the rotten leaves fall from the tree. These clouds also fall down on the surface of the west wind when there is unrest in the high sky. When the sky shows stormy conditions, these clouds are the harbinger of rain and lightning. The poet further presents the picture of a storm that is getting ready to blow. He says that the black hair of the storm is spread on the blue waves of the surface of the west wind, all the way from the horizon to the highest point in the sky. The hair of the storm is spread in the same way, just as they are disordered by some intoxicated female follower of Bacchus, the god of wine. The appearance of the sky indicates to him that a storm is getting ready to blow. The poet further presents a third picture. He imagines the whistling sound of the west wind to be the dirge of the dying ear. The ear is dying. The west wind is the funeral song over the death of the ear. A huge tomb will also be erected over the dead ears. The darkness of the night, which is spreading over the earth, will serve as the doom of that tomb. The collective strength of the cloud will be the arched roof of the tomb. From the cold seeming vapors or clouds in the sky will fall the rain, lightning and hailstones in the end. At last, the poet requests the west wind to listen to him. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Though who did just waken from his summer dreams, the blue Mediterranean where he lay, lulled by the quail of his crystalline streams, beside a pumice isle in Baez Bay, and saw in sleep old palaces and towers, quivering within the waves' intenser day, all overgrown with azure moss and flowers. So sweet the sense faints picturing them, though for whose path the Atlantic's level powers cleave themselves into chasms, while far below the sea blooms and the oozy woods which wear the sapless foliage of the ocean. No, the voice and suddenly grown grey with fear, and tremble and despoil themselves. Oh, here, reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the value and validity of the west wind. According to him, the west wind has its effect over the leaves and clouds and the earth and the sky. It also affects even the Mediterranean Sea too. Explanation: the poet P.B. Shelley accepts the Mediterranean Sea as a man and also accepts it a leaf. It sleeps and sees a dream throughout the summer season. The west wind arouses him and breaks his dream. In the summer, the Mediterranean is soothed by the pleasant sound of the bright rivers which fall into his waters, and it has gone to sleep. So the Mediterranean has dreams from the dreamful sleep. The Mediterranean is aroused by the violence of the west wind. In the dream, he sees that old places and towers slightly tremble in the bright and clear water of the ocean, where mosses and flowers of such overpowering sweetness grow. The very thought of them make us feel drowsy. The poet further describes the effect of the west wind on the Atlantic Ocean too. He says that when the west wind blows on the Atlantic, its water is agitated. Waves rise from one side to the other side. Between these waves, hollows are produced. Before the west wind blows, the surface of the Atlantic is level. But now it seems as if the Atlantic has cut a path on its surface so that the west wind may pass over it. Then again, the poet describes the effect of the west wind on the plants and the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. The plants and the at the bottom of the ocean are damp, but they have no sap in them. When the west wind begins to blow, those plants at once become aware of its arrival. They begin to tremble with fear and shed their leaves. Just as in the autumn, the trees shed their leaves. Similarly, the plants of the bottom of the ocean also shed their leaves. Hence, the plants stand in great terror of the wind. All this is scientifically correct. Now, the next stanza of the poem. If I were a dead leaf, thou mightiest bear, if I were a swift cloud to fly with thee, a wave to path beneath thy power and share the impulse of thy strength, only less free than thou, O controllable, if even I were as in my boyhood and could be the comrade of thy wanderings over heaven, as then when to outstrip the sky speed, scarce seemed a vision, I would never have striven, as thus with thee in prayer in my sore need. O lift me as a wave, a leaf, a cloud, I fall upon the thorns of life, I bleed. I have a heavy weight of hours has chained and bowed, one too like thee, tameless and swift and proud. reference will be seen. Context: in these particular lines, the poet P.B. Shelley expresses his vibrant idea about the value of the west wind. According to him, there is no place in the whole universe where the west wind has no effect. He prays to the west wind to give him some such power that he may lead his life in peace, because he has lost all his hopes and become hopeless and helpless. Explanation: here the poet P.B. Shelley prays to the west wind that he wants to get some power to get peace and happiness in his life. He imagines that he is a leaf or a cloud or a wave. He himself gets the power of the west wind naturally without any effort, and in such a condition he is in no need to make any request to the west wind. If he can save the eagerness and the power of the dream of his childhood, there is no need to request the west wind. But unfortunately, he has lost all these things in due course of time. He is neither a leaf nor a cloud nor a wave. He has no power of eagerness and dreams of his childhood, and the nature and ideas which he has have no similarity with the world. So he requests the west wind to raise him as he does with a leaf, a wave and a cloud. The poet is fully wounded and crushed, and he has lost all his hopes and has been fully tired of fighting against the hopelessness of the world. The poet says that he is very like the west wind, yet he is helpless. So he requests the west wind to give some extra power as he supplies to the leaf, cloud and wave, so that he may change himself and gain something better in his life. Now, the last stanza of the poem. Make me thy lyre, even as the forest is. What if my leaves are falling like its own? The tumult of the mighty harmonies will take from both a deep autumnal tone. Sweet though in sadness be thou spirit fears, my spirit be thou me impetuous one. Drive my dead thoughts over the universe like withered leaves to quicken a new birth, and by the incantation of this verse scatter as from an unextinguished hearth ashes and sparks my words among mankind. Be through my lips to unawakened earth the trumpet of a prophecy, O wind, if winter comes can spring be far behind. Reference will be seen. Context: in these particular lines, the poet P.B. Shelley expresses his idea about the value and validity of the west wind. According to him, the west wind is destroyer and preserver both. He destroys the rotten things and preserves the new seed to make a new progress in the world. To him, the west wind has the power to change the fate. It can remove all the problems of life. So he makes a request to the west wind to give him some power so that he may become powerful and can lead a hopeful life. Explanation: here, the poet P.B. Shelley requests the west wind to understand him or accept him as a musical instrument and play at him in the same way as it plays on the forest. In other words, he says that he should be treated as the west wind treats with the forest. He further says that he has lost all the hopes and joys of life and has become fully dull and barren. He has also lost all his power, joy, and youth. So he requests the wind, west wind, to blow over him as it blows over the forest and changes its fate. Similarly, it also can change his life where there is neither hope nor health nor happiness. He is leading a life of the autumn. The poet wishes to become identified with the fierce and swift west wind. He appeals to it to spread his thought in the world so that they may herald the birth of a new era. Now he has not the same force in his thoughts that can give new imagination to the mankind, just as ashes and sparks fly in all directions from a hearth where the fire has not completely gone out. Similarly, the poet wants his words to be scattered far and wide through the utterances of his prophecy regarding the advent of a golden age on the earth. Just as winter is followed in a natural course by spring, similarly, this era of evil and misery will soon be followed by an era of perfect happiness, love, and beauty. These lines express Shelley's bright optimism regarding the future of mankind and his belief in the golden age and in the perfection of human nature. So he says that there is still hope in him, and west wind will supply some new power that will bring great spring in his life after the winter. Thank you. This is the end of the P.B. Shelley's poem, The Ode to the West Wind.